KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jamie Haddad.
And I'm Robert Barncourt. Tomorrow is Friday, May 13th. Yes, Friday the 13th falls this year, this month, on Friday. Coming up tomorrow morning, listen for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez at 7 a.m. At 8 on Positively Revolting Talk Radio, Ani and Lynn will present part 2 of their interview with storyteller, scholar, and author Michael Mead. At 9 a.m., Economic Update with host Richard Wolff will be interviewing reporter Bob Henley about false economic recovery, about dissolving society, and about real journalism. At 10, it'll be Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints will be on with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 a.m. tomorrow, be sure to tune in to The Digital Divide. We're discussing how technology will impact your life with host Rabia Yeaman. Thanks to all of you KBOO members for helping us with our recent successful membership drive. We certainly could not do it without you.
Tonight's News in Depth dives deep into the history and legacy of Wapato Lake. Local historian and Washington County history expert Ken Bilderback spoke to KBOO reporter Natasha Delapine about communities connected to the lake and its place in Oregon's history. Tonight, Bilderback will be speaking at the Tualatin River National Wildlife Refuge at 7 p.m., part of an ongoing lecture series by the historian. The following is a shortened version of tonight's lecture.
In the case of Wapato Lake was right in the middle of one of the most fertile areas of farmland in the entire state, but still nobody wanted it, except for the Atfalati Indians, for whom it was their home base and for whom now the names Tualatin and Tualati, for example, those all came from the Atfalatis. The Atfalatis lived around Wapato Lake. They grew a starchy root vegetable called the Wapato or the Wapato, and that was their sustenance during the long winters because you can store those starchy root vegetables all year. They wanted the land. The settlers didn't. The Atfalatis were extremely peaceful people, got along with the settlers. The settlers said, you can have Wapato Lake as your reservation. The treaty was signed. Everything looked good. Except then Congress said they didn't care how peaceful a tribe was. They didn't want reservations that close to white settlements. So they packed up the Atfalatis and sent them to what is now the Grand Ronde Reservation down near Sheridan. That left Wapato Lake again completely unwanted. Still, nobody wanted to touch the thing. They didn't want to go near it. They viewed it as a swamp. They had come from places like Missouri and Arkansas where swamps were breeding grounds for malaria and other infectious diseases. So for the next 15 years, the federal government just looked for some way to give away Wapato Lake. In 1870, an entrepreneur by the name of Joseph Gaston, for whom the town of Gaston is named, came along, wanted to build a railroad through Gaston, but also looked at this swamp or lake and knew from his time back in the Midwest about the Swamp Act. As soon as Oregon adopted the Federal Swamp Acts, which allowed people to claim swamp land if they promised to drain it and turn it into farmland, they could take it free. So Joseph Gaston, who had missed out on all the donation land claims, suddenly had this almost 1,000 acres, which is much bigger than the largest of the 640-acre land claims. Suddenly, he saw a way of getting 1,000 acres of free land, claimed it under the Swamp Act, and
KBOO
tried
depth,
for the next 25 years
at the top
to effectively drain it and turn it into farmland. But he gave up. It just, first of all, they couldn't find the right crop mix. They couldn't find the right way. It's right on the Tualatin River. It floods every year. It's even now it's a lake all winter, and then it drains again in the summer. He just could never tame the thing, and was never successful at it. He walked away from it. Now, under the terms of the Swamp Act, the land should have reverted back to the federal government. But again, the federal government didn't want any part of it. So for the next few years, it just sat. It was used for hunting grounds, just whatever people could figure out, ice skating, whatever. But it never reverted back to the federal government. And over time, it took probably 65 years almost from the time Joseph Gaston first tried to drain it until some other farmers finally, more or less successfully, drained the lake. And they had a perfect use for it. They were onion farmers. And they knew, you know, it makes sense. Wapato Lake grew the wapato, the starchy root vegetable. They figured onions like the same environment that the wapato does. So they planted onions. They were extremely successful. Instead of farming it themselves, for the most part, they used tenant farmers and sharecroppers who would farm, and then they would take a cut of the sale of the onions. And many of the farmers who did that were Japanese Americans. They started this effort in 1935, and they really hit their stride in about 1941 when the crop was just huge. Eventually, some became owners, but at first they leased the land, they worked as sharecroppers, but another entity owned the lake. They were very successful onion farmers until 1941, but we all know what happened in December of 1941. Pearl Harbor was bombed. And in early 1942, the Japanese along the West Coast were packed up and sent to internment camps. In the case of Gaston, which by that time was about one quarter Japanese American, the population was packed up and moved to internment camps over in eastern Oregon. This all happened within a matter of months, where they were just packed up, sent first to the stockyards in Portland to live, and then to the internment camp when it was finished. When World War II ended, some of the Japanese farmers returned. Most prominently were the Furukawas, who came back and built a huge, thriving onion business. But very few of the other families ever returned to Gaston. The company that owned the entire lake began to sell it off to farmers in parcels of 40 acres, 20 acres. Instead of one huge company owning the entire lake and the pumps that drain it and the levees that keep the water out, it had to have a cooperative system, basically, of many families who owned it. And they all cooperated well. But child labor laws were passed so that they could no longer use children to pick the onions. The cost of the infrastructure became, you know, for a small farm to have to maintain all these levees and dikes. And the land over in eastern Oregon is, even today, compared to Washington County, you could have an onion farm in some place like Malheur County, 1,000 acres might cost less than 40 acres would in Washington County. It became impossible to really compete with that. Plus, one of the advantages of onions is that they store a long time. But that is also, in its own way, a problem, because that allows free trade. It allows onions to be imported from all over the world. All these forces started to combine, and it just eventually left the remaining farmers feeling like there was just no hope. It was very difficult to sell the land. So sort of as a last resort, they approached the federal government and asked if it would buy their land to create a wildlife refuge. The government said yes, although a thing we have quite a lot of now in Washington County is wildlife refuges and wetland. Plus, after 100 years of farming and draining and levees and pumps, it was far less natural. But the wildlife refuge right now is about 800 acres. There have been so many modifications to the land around the area. The Tualatin River was straightened and rerouted. That's, I think, what biologists will tell you is part of the issue. We don't even know for sure what natural means for Wapato Lake. But right now, Wapato Lake is still being farmed. Even though the Fish and Wildlife Service owns most of it, it's still leasing it out to farmers they're taking a very deliberative process to figure out exactly what can be done to so as to not affect the surrounding community, to complement the other reserves, to prevent things like invasive species from flowing into the land. Because Malheur Refuge, again, briefly, some of the similarities. Nobody wanted most of the eastern two-thirds of Oregon back when donation land claims were being given away because it's desert. At the time, without irrigation, you really couldn't grow much of anything. There was no cattle industry because there was no way to get meat or cattle from eastern Oregon to the population centers. So about the only people who really claimed land in eastern Oregon were more interested in things like mining than ranching and farming. But that changed about the time that Joseph Gaston was really working hard to reclaim, if you will, Wapato Lake. And what happened was the railroads came through. And suddenly, with railroads through eastern Oregon, it was practical to ship cattle to stockyards in Portland, San Francisco, I mean, even Denver. So all of a sudden, it became viable for cattle ranching. But Malheur also was slow to be taken up because it was the Paiute Native American reservation at the time. Because, again, it was land that nobody else wanted. But the Paiutes were forcibly evicted and moved up to the Yakima Nation in Washington, in fact, forced to walk like 300 miles to their new reservation, which freed up the land in Malheur. The cattle ranchers started taking it. When the reservation was vacated, some large corporations actually bought up big swaths of it as private grazing land. What was different from Wapato Lake is that Wapato Lake has many bird species, but they're species that are common up and down the Willamette Valley and up into Washington. Malheur happens to be the center of some very exotic birds that are not found that many places. And Teddy Roosevelt, 1908, Teddy Roosevelt was a very avid environmentalist, and some biologists showed him drawings and photographs of some of the exotic birds at Malheur Lake, and Teddy Roosevelt declared it a federal national wildlife refuge for birds, one of the first such designations in the country. So it was protected as far back as 1908, long before most people got into the concept of, you know, wetlands and wildlands and wildlife refuges. And so for most of its history, with a very brief time in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that's always been federal property, except for the parts that the private cattle companies bought. And they did okay until the Great Depression came along. And then, sort of similar to what's happening today with the onion farmers in Gaston, they could not sell their land. It just was no longer viable with the Depression going the way it was. Nobody had the money to buy it up and use it as cattle land. So just as in the case of Gaston, the cattle ranchers went to the federal government and said, will you buy our land? The federal government said yes, bought their land, and greatly expanded the Malheur Wildlife Refuge into more or less what we see today. Although the government has sold pieces of it back to private ownership and swapped out areas and that sort of thing. So we're ending up at Wapato Lake, almost where we are at the Malheur Wildlife Refuge, only with 100 years of differences, different timing, different motivations, but all of the same factors come into play in each case. I'll be speaking to the Tualatin River Keepers, and we'll be talking in much greater depth about Wapato Lake and what's going on there, and specifically about its history.
This is Natasha Delapine with KBOO News.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6 o'clock, and next is Rose City Native Radio. Stay tuned.
Good people. Another shining star has transcended. Prince Rogers Nelson has physically left this earth, and while he is greatly missed, his art will live forever. On May the 12th from 7 p.m. to midnight, we at Guess Who's Coming to Radio will pay tribute to this master of creativity in the best way we know how, by honoring his diverse range